The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Grace Payden for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Religion News Service, News and Observer, and the Catholic News Agency. Our first article was published by RNS on July 23 and written by Jack Jenkins and Adele M. Banks, entitled Amos Brown, Pastor to Kamala Harris, Known for Civil Rights, Reparations Activism. The Reverend Amos Brown, a longtime pastor of Third Baptist Church of San Francisco, was specific when he described Vice President Kamala Harris' connection to his church. She's an old-timer at the church, he told RNS in an interview on July 22nd. In fact, as he told RNS in 2023, she's also a dues-paying member, too. That might help explain why, when Harris met with Christian, Jewish, Muslim, and Sikh leaders in Los Angeles the previous year to discuss abortion rights and other issues, Brown was in attendance. Or why, when she spoke of him that same year, she praised my pastor as a man who also has long been her mentor. For two decades now, at least, I have turned to you, Harris said in remarks at the 2022 annual session of the National Baptist Convention, USA. I have turned to him, and I will say that your wisdom has really guided me and grounded me during some of my most difficult times, and you've been a source of inspiration to me always. So thank you, Reverend Brown, for being all that you are. And the long-standing connection between the two might be why Harris turned to Brown again last week, reaching out to him over the phone after President Joe Biden abandoned his re-election bid and endorsed the vice president. She asked for prayer, and Brown happily obliged. Brown and his wife prayed that Harris would receive the thing that Micah 6:8 records in the Bible, the fulfillment of what the Lord requires, to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with her God, Brown told RNS. He also prayed Harris would move forward in her campaign in the spirit of our ancestors. Brown recited lines from Lift Every Voice and Sing, a hymn sometimes referred to as the Black National Anthem. God of our weary years, God of our silent years, Thou who hast brought us thus far on the way, Thou who hast by Thy might led us into the light, keep us forever in the path, we pray. That's what this nation needs, Brown said, later noting that he endorses Harris for president in his personal capacity. That's what this vice president, and hopefully president, will be elevated to be. To bring this nation out of darkness, the darkness of incivility, the darkness of lying, the darkness of injustice, the darkness of irresponsible behavior. And that goes at all levels, from the local community up to the national government. Brown, 83, explained that he and Harris also have a shared political history. Harris served as Brown's campaign manager when he ran for re-election to the San Francisco Board of Supervisors in 1999, and Brown joined his wife in praying over Harris and her husband, Doug Emhoff, immediately before the 2021 inauguration ceremony. She was very close to our church family, Brown said. Brown's history with Harris extends to her family as well. A Jackson, Mississippi native and civil rights activist who was taught by the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. in a class at Morehouse College in the 1960s, Brown mentioned meeting Harris' mother, Shimela Gay-Palin, along with others who participated in civil rights activism. He formerly was a leader of Baptist churches in Westchester, Pennsylvania, and St. Paul, Minnesota, and has pastored the Third Baptist since 1976. His church, which has been affiliated with the National Baptist Convention, USA, and the American Baptist Churches, USA, was the site of a 2023 meeting of California's task force to study and develop reparation proposals for African Americans, shortly before it released its final report. Harm has been done to black folks by this nation, Brown, the vice chair of the task force, told RNS, and it's time for us to respond and not react, but respond in a responsible, rational, realistic way that will give us results to bring black folks from the bottom of the well, economically, academically, health-wise. The Associated Press Report for America reported in May that the California Senate had sent reparations proposals to the state assembly, including a measure that would help black families confirm that they were eligible for future state restitution. Speaking to RNS this week, Brown attributed Third Baptist longevity, it was founded in 1852, to its long history of social justice advocacy, or, as he put it, the fact that we've always been focused on the liberating gospel of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, and we have not focused on personalities. He added, that's why Vice President Harris, early on in her academic and political careers, connected with this church. At the height of the COVID-19 pandemic, Brown was an opponent of churches reopening too soon. We are not going to be rushing back to church, he said in a phone interview with the AP, noting that many denominational leaders had died or been sickened. Freedom of religion is not the freedom to kill folks, not the freedom to put people in harm's way. That's insane, he said. In 2020, Brown was among a list of 350 faith leaders who endorsed the Biden-Harris campaign. Early in the Trump administration, Brown supported black clergy who declared themselves independent of both the liberal left and the religious right. He advocated for get out the vote efforts ahead of the next elections when he spoke during a 2018 news conference. We've got to really vote like hell in this midterm election and in 2020 and get rid of this excuse, my one vote won't count, said Brown. Every vote counts. We've got to get that over to our congregations. This week, however, Brown appeared to lob thinly veiled criticism at former President Donald Trump, the 2024 Republican nominee, referring to how versions of Christianity's golden rule can be found in multiple religions. Brown asked how someone could refer to immigrants as evil, cruel, or rapist, a reference to descriptions Trump has used. Why would you do that to other people? Brown said. Earlier in his tenure at Third Baptist, the church created a summer school program, a music academy, and an after-school enrichment program with a local synagogue. Beyond his church, Brown has been involved in national and global events, including the 2001 United Nations Conference on Race and Intolerance in Durban, South Africa, where he represented the NAACP's national board. Brown told the San Francisco Chronicle that he learned from King, sitting at his feet at Morehouse, about personalism. Every person should be viewed as having dignity, regardless of how different they may be. We should respect them. In what might seem to be unusual pairings, Brown has joined forces with people outside Black Baptist circles for collaborations. In 2014, Brown and evangelist Franklin Graham wrote a joint anti-violence opinion column in USA Today in the wake of the police killings of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, and Eric Garner in Staten Island, New York. None of us is always right, and none is always wrong, they wrote. We believe we could all use a good dose of humility. We must avoid arrogance, even in our own convictions. Brown, the president of the San Francisco branch of the NAACP, appeared at a news conference marking the 2022 rededication of the Washington, D.C. Temple of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. In 2021, the LDS Church and NAACP launched initiatives including scholarships for black college students. Brown is the namesake of a fellowship that has brought young adults to Ghana with leaders of the NAACP and the LDS Church to learn the history of slavery. I'm humbled by this great example of this faith community uniting in order to heal the breaches in our nation, making bonds, and setting the bar higher for us to move away from war, strife, prejudice, in a world that so desperately needs people of goodwill and justice, Brown said. Brown told the Chronicle in a 2021 interview that the LDS Church's family research enabled him to learn that his great-great-grandfather, who was born enslaved, eventually owned 150 acres of land and with two other African-American men established a church and a school. It's a blessing to me that even in my genealogical chart, there was a meeting of self-determination, of enlightened piety, social justice, and high and noble respect for education, he told the San Francisco newspaper. Next, we have an article published by the Catholic News Agency on July 22nd, written by Tyler Arnold. 18 states back Indiana teachers' religious liberty lawsuit and transgender pronoun dispute. A coalition of 18 state attorneys general is throwing its support behind a lawsuit from a former Indiana high school teacher who lost his job because he would not use pronouns for students that were inconsistent with their sex. The Republican coalition, co-led by Indiana Attorney General Todd Rokita, filed an amicus brief with the United States Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit on Wednesday that asked the judges to rule that the teacher's religious liberty was violated. An amicus brief, also known as a friend of the court brief, is a document filed by parties that have an interest in the outcome of the litigation, but are not parties in the lawsuit. Former music teacher John Kluge, who taught orchestra at the Brownsburg Community School Corporation just northwest of Indianapolis, was given the option of resigning or being fired from his job over the pronoun dispute, according to his lawsuit. In 2017, the school district adopted a policy that forces teachers to use pronouns and names that reflect a student's self-asserted gender identity, even if they are inconsistent with the student's sex. Kluge requested a religious accommodation that would allow him to avoid using any pronouns in reference to students, simply calling them by their last names, so he could avoid using pronouns that are inconsistent with the student's biological sex. The school district initially granted Kluge, a Christian, his requested accommodation, and he taught for another year, according to the lawsuit. After receiving complaints from a few students and teachers, the school district revoked his accommodation, according to the lawsuit, and then forced Mr. Kluge to resign or be fired. In the amicus brief, the attorneys general wrote that the school district squandered an opportunity to showcase to students respect for people with different religious beliefs and practices by forcing Kluge's resignation. Discriminating against teachers with religious convictions raises serious concerns as to the values taught to students and whether students are truly free to discover, learn, and grow in their own thought processes and beliefs, the attorneys general added. Schools should strive to teach respect for all religions instead of uniformity of thought. In a statement, Rokita said that Kluge's compromise to avoid pronoun use altogether would allow him to treat everyone equally and respectfully while also staying faithful to his own religious convictions. Kicking this teacher to the curb sends students the wrong messages about America's heritage of respecting religion, Rokita added. And at a time when teachers are in short supply, this kind of intolerance of faith among faculty members is sure to push additional good teachers out of the classroom. Rory Gray, who serves as senior counsel for Alliance Defending Freedom, the legal group representing Cluj, told CNA that public schools can't force teachers to abandon their religious beliefs. Mr. Cluj went out of his way to treat all his students with respect and care, Gray said. Yet the Brownsburg School District violated Title VII by censoring and punishing him for his religious beliefs. The Seventh Circuit should protect the religious convictions of employees, especially for teachers in our public schools. A spokesperson for the school district did not respond to a request for comment from CNA. The school district has argued that the requested accommodation provides the district with an undue burden that jeopardizes the enforcement of its policies. The district has also argued that refusing to use a student's preferred pronoun and name could violate Title IX's prohibition on sex discrimination, a question that is currently before several courts. In 2021, a Virginia teacher was fired after he criticized a proposed Loudoun County Public School Board policy that would require teachers to use a student's preferred pronoun and name. The school board ultimately adopted the policy, but reached a settlement with physical education teacher Byron Tanner Cross that gave him his job back. Now an article that was published by the News and Observer on July 28, written by Michael Gold, and originally published by the New York Times News Service. Trump tells Christians they won't have to vote in the future. West Palm Beach, Florida. In the closing minutes of his speech to a gathering of religious conservatives Friday night, former President Donald Trump told Christians that if they voted him into office in November, they would never need to vote again. Christians, get out and vote, just this time, he said at the Believer Summit, an event hosted by conservative advocacy group Turning Point Action in West Palm Beach, Florida. You won't have to do it anymore. You know what? 4 more years, it'll be fixed. It'll be fine. You won't have to vote anymore, my beautiful Christians. Trump, who never made a particular display of religious observance before entering politics, continued, I love you, Christians. I'm a Christian. I love you. You got to get out and vote. In 4 years, you don't have to vote again. We'll have it fixed so good, you're not going to have to vote. Trump's comments came at the end of a nearly hour-long speech in which he appealed to religious conservatives by promising to defend them from perceived threats from the left. Earlier in his remarks, he lamented that conservative Christians do not vote in large numbers, a complaint he had made repeatedly on the trail. They don't vote like they should, Trump said of Christians. They're not big voters. Trump's suggestion that Christians would not have to go to vote again if he is elected, quickly spread across social media. Some argued that it was a threat that the 2024 election could be the nation's last if he were to win, and claimed it was further evidence of an authoritarian, anti-democratic bent he has displayed throughout his political candidacy. The Trump campaign did not immediately respond to a request for comment to clarify Trump's statement. And the last of our articles for today was published by the Religion News Service, written by Maria Teresa Hernandez on July 13. On anniversary of Frida Kahlo's death, her art spirituality keeps fans engaged across the globe. Mexico City. Frida Kahlo had no religious affiliation. Why then did the Mexican artist depict several religious symbols in the painting she produced until her death on July 13, 1954? Frida conveyed the power of each individual, said art researcher and curator Ximena Jordan. Her self-portraits are a reminder of the ways in which we can exercise the power that life, or God, so to speak, has given us. Born in 1907 in Mexico City, where her blue house remains open for visitors, Kahlo used her own personal experiences as a source of inspiration for her art. The bus accident that she survived in 1925, the physical pain that she endured as a consequence, and the tormented relationship with her husband, Mexican muralist Diego Rivera, all nurtured her creativity. Her take on life and spirituality sparked a connection between her paintings and her viewers, many of whom remain passionate admirers of her work on the 70th anniversary of her death. "One of the keys to understand how she achieved this," Jordan said, "lies in her self-portraits." Kahlo appears in many of her paintings, but she did not portray herself in a naturalistic way. Instead, Jordan said, she recreated herself through symbols that convey the profoundness of interior human life. Diego and I is the perfect example. Painted by Kahlo in 1949, it sold for $34.9 million at Sotheby's in New York in 2021, an auction record for a work by a Latin American artist. In the painting, Kahlo's expression is serene despite the tears falling from her eyes. Rivera's face is on her forehead, and in the center of his head, a third eye, which signifies the unconscious mind in Hinduism and enlightenment in Buddhism. According to some interpretations, the painting represents the pain that Rivera inflicted on her. Jordan, though, offers another reading. The religiosity of the painting is not in the fact that Frida carries Diego in her thoughts, Jordan said. The fact that she bears him as a third eye, and Diego has a third eye of his own, reflects that his affection for her made her transcend to another dimension of existence. In other words, Kahlo portrayed how individuals connect to their spirituality through love. "I connected with her heart in writing," said Chris Mello, a 58-year-old American artist whose favorite Kahlo work is the aforementioned painting. "We had the same love language and similar history of heartache." Mello, unlike Kahlo, did not go through a bus accident that punctured her pelvis and led to a life of surgeries, abortions, and a leg amputation. "Still," Mello said, "she experienced years of physical pain, and in the midst of that suffering, while fearing that resilience might slip away, she said to herself, 'If Frida could do this, so can I.'" Even if most of her artwork depicts her emotional and physical suffering, Kahlo's paintings do not provoke sadness or helplessness. On the contrary, she is seen as a woman, not only an artist, strong enough to deal with a broken body that never weakened her spirit. "Frida inspires many people to be consistent," said Omni, a London-based Spanish artist who asked to be identified only by his artistic name, and reinterprets Kahlo's works with artificial intelligence. "Other artists have inspired me, but Frida has been the most special because of everything she endured," Omni said. "Despite her suffering, the heartbreak, the accident, she was always firm." For him, as for Mello, Kahlo's most memorable works are those in which Rivera appears on her forehead like a third eye. According to Jordan, Kahlo touched a chord that most artists of her time did not. Influenced by revolutionary nationalism, muralists like Rivera or David Alfaro Siqueiros kept a distance from their viewers through intellectual works that mainly focused on their social, historic, and political views. Kahlo, on the other hand, was not shy in portraying her physical disabilities, her bisexuality, and the diversity of beliefs that weigh on the human spirit. In The Wounded Deer, for example, she is transformed into an animal whose body bleeds after being shot by arrows. And just like a martyr in Catholic imagery, Kahlo's expression remains composed. Aligned with a Marxist ideology, Kahlo thought that the Catholic Church was emasculating, meddlesome, and racist. But in spite of her disdain toward the institution, she understood that devotion leads to a beneficial spiritual path. A decade after her accident, probably overwhelmed by the fact that she survived, Kahlo started collecting votive offerings, tiny paintings that Catholics offer as gratitude for miracles. In her blue house, the 473 votive offerings are still preserved. Kahlo might have regarded her survival as a miracle, Jordan said. The only difference is that she, due to her context, did not attribute that miracle to a deity of Catholic origin, but to the generosity of life. Perhaps that's why, in her final days, she decided to paint a series of vibrant, colorful watermelons that would be her last work. In that canvas, over a split watermelon lying underneath a clouded sky, she wrote, Vida la vida, or Long Live Life. We have run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News, so I hope that you'll listen again next time, and I hope that you've enjoyed it. I'm Mary Grace Payton, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.